Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
It's got the volume enhanced tone technology, and that really gives the bugle a tremendous advantage in sound. You know, my hope is that people can watch what I'm doing and find it really relatable and achievable. I don't advocate that. People should not shoot off a bench. They should zero on a bench and then train. How are you gonna hunt? You need to shoot how you hunt. You could throw all the stones you want at me, but I'm gonna pick them up. And they're going to grow in my hand. I'm going to throw them back. I think there's more respect and more reverence that's given when they actually sit down and realize the price that has been paid for our sustenance. It takes people that are willing to step up and find these types of kids that don't have as many opportunities and be the people that help lead them into a different direction. Our culture needs people that are leaders and not people that are waiting for somebody else to show them how to do it, but are willing to be the leader that makes it happen. This is Christy Titus, and you're listening to Living Country in the City.
Y'all ready for your dose of flyover state spirit? Straight from the concrete jungle? Well, put down your latte and pull on your boots. It's time for Living Country in the City.
All right, y'all, welcome to episode 115 of Living Country in the City. Before we get going, I want to say a big thank you to Sawyer Products for their continued support of the podcast. Y'all, Sawyer makes some incredible products that help keep you in the outdoors for longer. They're a household name. They've been doing it for well over 30 years, and their products are top of the line when it comes to water filtration, first aid, insect repellent, and sunscreen, all of that super essential gear that you need when you're in the outdoors. So head on over to Sawyer.com and check them out. All right, y'all, with no delay, let's get into today's episode. All of y'all that have been listening for a while may remember about 2 years ago, one of my very first podcasts, I had the lovely Christy Titus on. We had an incredible conversation, had a lot of fun getting to know each other. Well, folks, she is back. We sat down together at Western Hunt Expo this year and really just took a little bit of time to catch up and talk a bit about hunting. So y'all, I hope you enjoy episode 115 with the one and only Miss Christy Titus.
Well, we are here at the Western Hunting and Conservation Expo. Last day, everyone has sore backs, sore legs.
I think you're the only one with the sore back.
I have been hearing from everyone, at least because you've got chairs in your booth, at least.
I have not sat once.
Really, though?
And no.
All I know is I've been hearing from everyone. My back, my legs,
my
and
feet.
My head.
Yeah. But, well, the head is usually self-induced.
Oh, yeah.
But you
that
are carrying a giant backpack, though.
Yeah, well, there's honestly not that much weight in there. I've just got a few hats piled in there, so
it looks
more impressive
large.
Than it actually
yes.
is. But, well, if you folks have been listening since at least episode 6, since pretty much the very beginning of
yeah.
the podcast, you may recognize the lovely voice of Miss Christy Titus. It
or
is,
not.
maybe not. But it has been a while. We've seen each other a few times since the International Sportsman's Expo 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Since some random random guy who had no clue what he was doing with an elk call. Well, still really doesn't, but
you're working on it. You're a work in progress.
I'm always a work in progress, but came up to the poor crippled woman.
I know.
At the Sportsman's Expo.
That was I was in rough shape then too. Yep. I was like, can we please just go sit down? I gotta put my leg up.
That was just such a funny day. You know, because I think I had released two podcasts at the time. I had recorded maybe one before I'd started talking. One or two additionally before I'd started talking to you. And, you know, I had no clue what I was doing. I didn't know anyone in the industry.
We took you under our wing, though.
You guys full-on adopted me that weekend. Because that was the first or second day of the expo. Mm-hmm. And, you and Rocky and the Servies and... trying to think who else was out there. It was a whole crew.
That's the great thing about the hunting community is that we all have such a common love for the outdoors that we welcome new people and share this space, you know, with pleasure. You know, like, we want more people getting involved in what we're doing, and especially your perspective was so unique. I felt it was very important to help not only embrace but to support what you're doing, because it's, you know, getting your voice into a whole new demographic and, you know, hearing the voice of the hunter and how important how hunting is conservation and having that translate into a whole new California. Ooh. Yeah.
With all the comments, oh, our camel's outlawed in California. Oh, you guys can hunt out there. And yes, I've heard it all at this point.
Yeah. Well, you'd wonder, but California is a very big state and there's a lot of California that's really great. And there's a lot of California that's not so great, but we won't judge the entire state.
Most people that only know California from like L.A., San Diego, and San Francisco would not recognize 90% of the state. There's literally that just like sliver of those states along the I-5 that are a little rough sometimes. Mm-hmm. The rest is, I mean, we got a ton of farmland. We got a ton of, I mean, we have so much public land out there.
Yeah.
And a lot of great opportunity. Coming in, not knowing anyone, talking with. I remember you filming as Rocky was showing me how to use the elk call.
Well, and I was on the IG stories.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I remember just thinking to myself, I had no idea who he was. The history right there. He was just some nice dude that worked for the company that was selling calls, and I'm like, shoot, somebody's helping me learn how to elk call. Okay. Yeah. And then, I mean, I think it was like a month later or even longer. Like, I kind of found out who he was. I'm like, that guy was teaching me to elk call? Oh, my gosh.
That's the great thing about these expos, because all of the companies that the great minds that are behind all the products that we get to use while we're in the field to help us become successful, they're all in this room. And so if you have a willingness to learn or a hunger for knowledge, this is a great place to have that fulfilled. And you get to meet the most incredible people that do some incredible things that we can all aspire and look up to. And they're in one room. It's really profound.
Right. I mean, it's just funny looking at the difference between two years ago. Saying that does not sound like that long, but it feels like a lifetime.
Well, it feels like a lifetime because you've done so much. Oh, holy smokes, look how many hunts you've been on and things you've accomplished and experiences you've had that are life-changing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no other word for it. It is literally life-changing because of what hunting is. I mean, yeah, for some people it's a hobby. For most, it is an absolute lifestyle, and I was figuring that out then. I mean, now I think it's fair to say I have fully adopted it. I mean, I'm building most of my life's decisions surrounding being able to do this and living that lifestyle. And it's just funny, you know, coming in, like, looking at people on Instagram and being like, okay, you know, this person kind of looks like they know what they're talking about, like sneaking peeks at names. And now I walk through the expo and it's like, I got people run up giving me hugs.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's great. Like,
it's a different
world.
Well,
I always laugh because I meet people and I look at them and I'm like, okay, so have we actually like ever met face to face or do I just know you because I follow you on Instagram? Like, if there's a wall there, it gets a little clouded sometimes because you're not sure if you've actually physically met someone or if you just follow them because you feel like you're such a part of people's people's lives and in their day-to-day just because of social media. It really unites us in a truly, truly significant way. I mean, I have people coming up to me all the time now like, hey, I love following what you're doing on your ranch and how exciting is that? And, you know, when are you going to post new pictures? And I'm like, well, maybe when I get home for more than like 5 minutes because I've been home 12 hours in 3 weeks.
Yeah. No, it's one of those things, and it's funny because there's people I've met multiple times or I interact with on a daily basis almost that I know less about than people that I've solely interacted with on Instagram. And I mean, more than just following their following their stories, liking their pictures, whatever, but people you talk with and you stay in contact with. And those are the people, and I probably said it a million times, those are the people you run into here at the expo, and you're like, I don't know if I should, like, give you a hug, a high five, or introduce myself right now, because I know you, but we've never actually met. This is really, I'm not sure what the protocol is, is for this, but no, it's, I mean, and for someone like me that's, especially back then, you know, wanting to learn, wanting to figure out gear, wanting to figure out hunts and just talk to smart people, coming to an expo like this is
And there's a ton of new gear out there all every year. It really surprises me the forward thinking that so many of these manufacturers have into taking a product that we all use every day and they make it, you know, not only good, but they make it better all the time. And that ingenuity is truly incredible. And you walk through here and you're always learning and it's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, it's, and some of this stuff, you look at it, it's almost like, okay, how do you make a better paperclip? Well, you can't until all of a sudden, like, somebody makes a better paperclip and you're like, holy crap, how did you
make the paperclip better?
That's that's amazing. And it's like simple products that you wouldn't think really could be improved upon. And every year they manage to. Have you gotten a chance to do much browsing?
I haven't done any browsing. No, I, that's the thing for me is I have a booth here and, I try to be in my booth as much as possible, which this year I'm fortunate. My sister's helping me. In years past, I've been working
my
booth by myself.
You've been pretty solo,
Yeah, and so, but this year it afforded me the opportunity to, you know, go to the Cabela's booth, stop by the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation booth, to go to the Rocky Mountain Hunting Calls booth, and do some other things with my time, but it still doesn't allow me time to walk around and kind of just peruse and walk through every aisle. So I have, honestly, no idea of what's even in this room because I don't get to see it. Everybody else is ahead of the game as far as my knowledge.
Well, so speaking of Rocky Mountain Hunting Calls, since we talked the first time, I think it was pretty much right after we talked, a whole new brand got released.
Yeah.
So tell the fine folks listening all about the new line of calls.
So I have a new line. It's called the Pursue the Wild series. It launched last year and it's a 3-part series. So I have a bugle tube, I have an external reed cow call, and I have a diaphragm call. And my bugle tube is called the Wild Frenzy and it's a great call. It's got a lot of volume. It's got the selector at the bottom so you can, you know, open that up for more volume or kind of close it down if you're in a little tighter situation and you want a little less volume. It's got the volume enhanced tone technology built in, which is that little spring sound found inside. And that really gives the bugle a tremendous advantage in sound. The notes that you get out of that bugle are incredible. The back pressure that's designed into the bugle, you can really hold your octaves longer.
It adds that such a big resonance.
Oh, yeah.
And in such a smaller size.
Absolutely.
You get that same resonance that you would get with one of their giant bugle tubes, and you're not carrying something
huge.
Huge, yeah.
It's still a good size tube. It's just not as big as some of the other tubes. This year, I was really excited. We launched that tube in Kryptek Highlander, so that was really fantastic. I have a new acrylic external reed cow call this year. It's called the Wild Thing, and you can sing the song in your head when you say that if you want, because that's kind of what I did when I named it. I was like, da 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 da. Wild Thing, you know,
that'll work.
You know,
that'll work.
Anyway, so that's how the call got named. And it's a great sounding call, you know, especially if you struggle with a diaphragm or you just want that really nasally estrusy sounding cow call. It's got a great volume to it. And then I have the Wild Fury diaphragm call, which is tried and true. It's got the plastic pellet plate top. It's got a little bit narrower frame on the diaphragm. And it has just great sounds all around for cow-calf sounds and also your bugles. So that call has been a very, very, very good selling call. And we're making some changes to that this year. Not that that one's not great. We're just kind of doing some design changes on the call itself. So I'm excited about that, and we're working on some big things. So
I still have, from 2 years ago, my Wild Fury and my Wild Frenzy samples that you guys, because you were giving out the samples of the Wild Fury, and then Rocky had a sample of the Wild Frenzy, too, and after the show.
Hooked you up with that.
He was like, okay, this poor kid needs a bugle, too.
Oh! So I gave it to you.
And so
that's
he hooked
so
me
sweet.
Up with that. Well, because I do like it. I was trying out the different bugle tubes, and I liked having that selector on the front. But I liked that the resonance that the I forget what it's called. The
volume
spring.
Enhanced tone technology.
The volume enhanced tone technology provides.
VETT.
Yeah, it gives you. I mean, it gives you that very full, rich kind of bugle that you get from some of the wider, bigger tubes. But like you said, I mean, it's, you know, it's still a bugle tube. Yeah. You're not, it's not a teeny tiny bugle tube, but you get so much more.
You get a lot of sound in a smaller package. But the nice thing about Rocky's calls is they've got, you know, back pressure. And when I talk about they've got good back pressure, a lot of people, if you think about this, if you blow through a paper towel holder and you try to use that as a bugle, your air escapes your diaphragm at a much more rapid pace. Mm-hmm. So if you blow through my tube or another one of Rocky's tubes, your air stays in that tube and it creates a back pressure. So it allows you to have air without feeling breathless to create all of those high notes we want to reach and then carry them out and finish them out with a nice grunt or a chuckle at the end or just a growl at the end or however you decide to end your call. So it's really nice. He's got that technology built into those tubes of that back pressure.
Yeah. And it's, I liked the combination of everything, and you hadn't come out with them yet.
No.
And I was sitting there, I'm like, oh man, when's she gonna come out with them? And I think it was, I mean, that was what, like almost a, only like a month before or something like that. It was a few weeks.
It was brand new.
And I was like, okay, I'm gonna have to order one right off. And he's like,
we got you.
I'm like, are you serious? Like, and that was. Mm-hmm. That was like the biggest deal for someone new coming into hunting, especially. That was the nicest thing he could have done in the world.
The generosity in the hunting and outdoor community is incredible. And then it doesn't every day. It's very touching. You see people doing wonderful things, and you know Donnie Drake and Corey Jacobson working with Hunt of a Lifetime, and I work with Wounded Warrior Outdoors, and you know you have other groups like Wishes for Warriors here, and I've worked with Children of Circumstances Outdoors. And so there's a lot of people, you know, helping kids, helping people, helping folks get into new gear, giving samples. There's just a lot of helping hands that happen in the hunting community, and it makes it such a great place to be part of.
Yeah, and it's – honestly, it's not coming from this perspective, but it's just good business too. I mean, you know, Rocky taking that time, you and Rocky taking that time to show me how to – use the reeds and the bugles and show me all the different stuff and explaining it to me, I absolutely am loyal to this company. I mean, and obviously if the bugles did not work, if the reeds did not work for me, I probably wouldn't use them. But it's just developing that relationship is so important and it's valuable for everyone all around. There's value in there, and you know, everyone likes having a good buddy to call up with hunting questions, and if nothing else, just it's nice saying hi to everyone here, and seeing the smiling faces, and someone that legitimately lights up when you walk up to a booth and give them some grief. And
well, that's the best part about the expo is giving each other grief.
Oh my gosh!
I mean, I live for that, right? So if I'm not teasing with you, we're probably not that good of friends.
Because it's John Bear. I'm going to be talking to him.
Oh, I love John.
I love him so much.
He's the announcer for the auctioneer for, if anybody doesn't know, listening.
I had no idea who he was last year. I was just waiting to meet someone out by the front entrance. And there's some cool dude in a really nice suit and a cowboy hat.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there. I think I may have complimented on the hat or the suit or something.
Or both, yeah.
Yeah, who knows? When we just started talking, like, just about nothing, and I had no idea. It's a pretty big deal around here, you know? You know, this year, you know, he saw me and he would, hey, and I swear we run into each other like every 15 minutes this whole weekend. And, you know, I'm joking around, and I'm like, oh, got to hide from him and all that stuff, and, you know, giving him grief. And all of a sudden, I'm at one of the banquet dinners, and I'm like,
he's walking on stage. He's running the show.
I was like, that's my buddy. And then they're kind of introducing him. I'm like, okay. That's just my buddy in the cowboy hat.
You have to be careful at those banquets. I had one of his spotters last night just about having me bid on a $30,000 tag.
Oh,
he's
geez.
Like, come on, you want to buy it? I'm like, and I almost tempted. I'm like, no, I'm not. Wait. He's like, your car's paid off, right? I'm like, no, it's not.
I mean, you can take out a loan on your car, right?
Yeah, take out. Sell everything you own and buy this deer tag. No,
oh, man.
I'm good.
Well, so speaking of hunts, how did this last season go for you?
So this is my second season filming for my digital series, Pursue the Wild. And I mean, honestly, like if you would have asked me 10 years ago if I'd be doing what I'm doing, I would say no. But I came up with the concept and logo and name and everything for Pursue the Wild over 12 years ago. And I just kind of let it sit until I had something to use it for that I felt was the right fit, right match. And so Pursue the Wild, second year filming on that. You know, this last year I did a lot of deer hunting. I was blessed to go doll sheep hunting. So this year, you know, I've got a good lineup going as well. I try to do a lot of focus on hunting public land. If I use a guide or an outfitter, I try to promote other women that are really in the hunting world and are authentic and legitimate. And I've done some great hunts with some ladies. I got dropped off with two girls 100 air miles from the nearest road, and we hunted moose and caribou, and they were in their 20s. And
amazing.
With North River Outfitters, it was a great experience. So Pursue the Wild for me, you know, going into my second year, I'm pretty excited about all the things I have coming this year. A lot more public land hunts again this year. Last year I hunted a lot of public land and had a lot of success out there, and just trying to do a lot with my mules and my dad and, you know, bears, antelope, elk, deer, everything in between. My big destination hunt this year will be mountain caribou, which I did a couple years ago, and I want to go back. I'm going to do a late season mountain caribou hunt in the snow, and we're going to stay in Kufaro teepee tents, and it's going to be a good time.
So where's that going to be?
Northwest Territories.
Okay.
So I want to hit that migration and really kind of see that. And, you know, my last caribou I got was an incredible journey. It was an opportunity hunt. But I want to go up and do the whole snow and stay in the teepees and just have a different type of experience.
There's something so incredible about that. Like, I mean, you know, when we recorded last time, I was getting ready for an Idaho elk hunt and did not quite turn out like I hoped it would, but...
That happens often.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, I learned a lot, but one of the amazing things, however, to some extent, it added a little bit of a misery aspect to it, but it also added this kind of just awesome, just wonderful, beautiful part to the trip was being out in my sawtooth with my stove, snow just dumping all around. Yeah, it was a little rough the next morning when I'm like hiking through knee-deep snow and trying to find elk sign. But there's just something about it that made it incredible being out there. Yeah. And I mean, anything covered with snow is just absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah. And the gear now, I mean, that's what's so great about coming to these shows again is checking out the new gear. I mean, on my moose hunt, I was in a tent and it was snowing. We had 6 inches of snow, and I called my mom on a sat phone, and I'm waiting for a plane for the weather to break and for a plane to come get me. And my mom's like, oh, it's snowing there. I'm like, yeah. She's like, oh, good thing you're in a cabin and you know, you're so probably warm and at least cozy. You can watch all the snowfall. And I'm like, mom, I'm in a tent. And she's like, how are you staying warm? And I'm like, well, I got a slick bag. It's a 0-degree bag. I'm warm. And she's like totally dumbfounded that I could be sleeping outside in a tent and be warm. But that's adventure to me. I mean, I really live for those ultimate adventure kind of mountain hunts where you're backpacking, you're living off your back and really, really get a lot out of the DIY stuff. And, you know, going forward, you know, for this year, for Pursue the Wild and for what I've got going on, it's just, for me, it just gets better every year.
It's exciting. And it, you know, very excited to see what's coming this season.
Yeah.
Check out those hunts. And I love watching those adventure hunts because I sit there, I'm like, okay, I can't go on that hunt right now. But now it's on the list.
Yeah.
Now it's on the list. And that's one of mine. I think we may have even talked about that when we first recorded. But, like...
Well, and that's what I love about my series. I do so much public land hunting. You know, my hope is that people can watch what I'm doing and find it really relatable and achievable. Because you know, being a woman, I am not out there alone. I have a cameraman, but I'm the one calling the shots. It's my mm-hmm. hunt. The success and ultimately the failure of it's on my shoulders. And if that happens, and, you know, either way, whichever the outcome is, and I hope that, you know, other girls watch what I'm doing and they're like, well, she's going out. She's on public land. She's hunting. She has no guide. If she can do this, I can do this. And that's to me a very profound message for a lot of women. And I always tell people, they're like, well, don't you get nervous when you were hunting alone? And I'm fortunate enough to have a cameraman now, so I'm typically not alone, quote unquote. Yeah. But you know, when I do hunt alone, you know, I started when I was younger, you know, with small triumphs where I would, you know, have a certain radius for my truck I would hunt, and then I extended that radius slowly. And as you grow confidence in your equipment and using your equipment like a, you know, GPS and like, you know, marking waypoints and being able to return navigation to those waypoints, and it empowers you to be able to do more.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean, you learn skills that you may not have had before.
That's
as
right.
Well, you find new gear, and that's one of the interesting things. You know, I look back at like the gear I was buying back then, and I mean, some of it I'm using the exact same pieces. Yeah. Other bits are
completely different,
completely out in left field. And you, I mean, it's every single bit of this, whether it's from the gear aspect, whether it's from the field craft skill aspect, or literally just the fear aspect, the mental aspect of it. You learn so much going along the way.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're always growing with that and pushing your boundaries a little bit more every time, or pushing them a whole lot more sometimes than you expect to. But when you come out of that and you realize, like, oh, well, nothing happened. Or or even, you know what, something really bad did happen, but I got through it. Mm-hmm. And I'm here and it makes everything else, I don't know. It's just you come back after that and you're like, wow, this used to seem so intimidating. Now it's
Doable, achievable.
Now it's absolutely achievable.
We got to get you hunting steel now.
Steel?
Yeah. I do long range. You know, I compete nationally in long range shooting.
Yeah.
And we got to get you hunting steel. We got to get you really proficient with a rifle. And
so back in the day, I used to teach rifle marksmanship. And for this odd-ed hunt that I'm going on, this will probably come out I guarantee this will come out after the odd-ed hunt. Hopefully everybody will have already seen the awesome long-bearded giant horn sheep that I'm going to be bringing home, because very confident, very positive about that.
So you taught rifle marksmanship?
Yeah. So that was part of the reason why I started getting into hunting. So I used to work with this. It would be like a weekend clinic,
mm-hmm.
and it was family friendly. We'd teach anyone from like 6-year-olds on their first Ruger 10/22 to like former military dudes that are just trying to like kind of refresh. They haven't been shooting in years, and they're just trying to refresh their skills. And it's a weekend clinic, and we would teach like precision long range marksmanship, and we teach it very old style, where you're not shooting off of bags, you're not shooting off of rest, you're shooting with a sling. You know, we'd have old like vintage GI slings. We'd use the old ones that were mass produced back in the day. And
well, I don't shoot off a bench. I'm not an advocate for that.
Yeah.
I don't advocate that. People should not shoot off a bench. They should zero on a bench and then train.
Exactly.
How are you going to hunt?
Exactly.
You need to shoot how you hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody shoots in a hunting situation off a bench.
Exactly.
I mean, typically.
I mean, you know, you never know, and I'm losing my clothes here, apparently.
Wow.
Hey,
everybody, you guys can't see what's happening right now, but let me give you the behind the scenes.
but, yeah, so we teach. It would be I called it like a history and heritage or a history, heritage, and marksmanship clinic. And so we'd teach rifle
Who's
marksmanship. It was the program. It was there would be a group of instructors.
Okay.
It was a whole national program called Appleseed. And it's all over the U.S. There's multiple locations in various states. And you'd go out and...
I remember us talking about this now.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about
absolutely.
It, I think. And yeah, you know, we'd teach a little bit of history.
Yeah.
We'd teach that marksmanship.
Well,
and
now you got to start competing with me.
And, I'm not quite ready for that. It's been a while since I've been behind a rifle.
Don't sell yourself short. The best way to train is to go do it.
And so also, I finally picked up, you know, I haven't had anything but my 22s, and I've got my M1 Garand.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally picked up a rifle again for the first time.
Right on.
In
because you've just converted to bow hunting like hardcore.
Oh, I mean, it's hard not to sometimes. You pick up that bow and it's just so much. And it's also so much cheaper after you buy the bow.
Yeah.
Like the initial purchase is pretty hefty. But I mean, when you start getting halfway deep, I mean, when I first started shooting, no, it cost about as much to
shoot my
bow
because
I was losing
right.
arrows left and right.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, the monetary aspect of it is kind of nice after a while. And but it's just fun. You know, it's you can typically go. It's easier to find a place to shoot a bow than a rifle.
Oh, certainly.
I picked up a rifle recently. I got behind it to sight it in. I was like, it was very much like I wasn't going out to shoot. I was going, I need to hurry up and sight in this rifle. I got behind it, and I ended up going through two boxes of ammo because I was having so much fun.
Yeah.
I forgot
how much
I love
it is.
That.
Yeah.
And
I go through 80 rounds in like a couple hours, and I'm like, oh, that was fast. How did I go through that many so fast?
Expensive.
Okay. yeah, it's easy to do. And, you know, there's a lot of great firearm platforms out there where you mm-hmm. can train, like the Ruger Precision Rimfire is a little 22, and you can train and do work through all your fundamentals, work on your position building techniques, work on your times, and you're shooting 22 ammo. So it's like,
yeah. Even
easy
that's
day.
Gotten expensive now, though. I remember when I first started.
By comparison, it's cheap.
I mean, yeah, you're not paying
a buck and 25 a round
exactly.
or a buck a round. Yeah, exactly.
But I really always recommend to people they start shooting those Ruger 10/22s or, you know, whatever happens to be available. I just immediately go straight to that because
yeah.
that was my first.
That's your first.
First rifle.
And you know what? I'll just keep that because Ruger makes the best guns.
Oh yeah. You're not going to hear me argue with that. Yeah. And I'm shooting a Ruger. I picked up a Ruger American.
Yeah. That's what I do most of my hunting with.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm getting used to that. It's definitely different than shooting the semi-auto. It is. And I'm
what
not used to.
What caliber did you get?
30-06.
Okay.
Mostly because I have all the reloading gear from my M1 Garand, and I was like, oh.
You need to get a muzzle brake on it.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I picked it up.
Because they're pretty light rifles. It can be poppy.
It's very poppy. It doesn't have a hard kick to it, but yeah, it's very
poppy.
It bounces a lot. And using the scope, I'm used to shooting irons to where I can see everything very clearly.
Yeah.
With that scope, you know, you're zoomed so far in, it's like there's a lot more movement on shot placement. And
yeah, you need to put a brake on that thing, and then you'll have a lot of forgiveness on your recoil there.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I picked
it's
it up for this.
It's threaded for it.
Yeah.
Should be.
They're
almost always capped.
Yeah, so. But I picked it up for this Audad hunt because I'm like, I want to take the bow. But I think I may have said it a couple of times. Like, this was not intended to be, like, my September adventure elk hunt where I pack in and am going out for the whole experience. This is, like, I just kind of want to go on a fun hunt and get it done.
You know, here's the thing, though. Like, I hunt with a firearm as much as I do with a bow. And for new hunters especially that have not actualized a lot of hunting success, I think it's good for them to kind of gain some confidence with a firearm, have some success, learn a little bit about hunting, have some lessons where, you know, they might not be deal-breaking lessons. Because bow hunting's harder. It's just a lot harder. And you have to be a lot closer and there's a lot more that has to be absolutely perfect and right. And so there's nothing, man, I mean, rifle hunting's challenging as well. I mean, I've had some really tough hunts this year with guns and I don't think that there's anything wrong with or shameful about picking up a gun and going hunting.
Oh,
at
not
all.
In the slightest.
There's a great way for you to be
first
successful.
Person. It's the most hypocritical thing for me to say, but I'm the first person to say, do not go bow hunting for your first hunt.
Yeah,
I
don't.
Mean, just don't. I would not change. I mean, once again, I think I've said it this way. If I had the choice between having it not happen at all or you know, I would not change it. I would gladly go through all of that again to learn what I learned. And I was super proud that my first ever big game tag filled was with a bow.
Yeah.
That's
a huge accomplishment.
I worked very hard at that, and it took quite a while.
It can. Sometimes we get lucky, and sometimes we don't, you know, and sometimes it's skill. But I think you're smart. As new hunters, I think it's important for them to.
Well, it just eliminates so many of the extra layers. You know, I maybe it's a cheesy analogy, but it's like, you know, I think I've said it before, you got the onion.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, you know, remove those layers a few bits at a time until, you know, you get to that juicy center bit where you've got that super romantic hunt that you want, yeah. You know, that hardcore hunt, rather than just trying to cut straight through with a dull knife.
Mm-hmm. But, amen to that.
Oh, man. So have you thrown any snakes at vegans lately?
No, I don't. You know, I don't have any anti or vegan attacks online, really.
No, none recently.
I don't really, hardly at all, really. I mean, it's, for me personally, it's rare to never that I have any anti-hunting attention. I'm fortunate for that, but I've also dedicated my life to conservation. And it's really hard to attack somebody who's been so dedicated and an advocate for the betterment of wildlife and wild places. It's just tough to, what are you going to say to somebody? You could throw all the stones you want at me, but I'm going to pick them up and they're going to grow in my hand. I'm going to throw them back because I'm armed with facts.
There you go.
And facts don't lie, and people have a hard time refuting facts. And you know, I always tell people, if you have people that start attacking you on social or start attacking your way of life, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation has a campaign that they pioneered called the Hunting is Conservation campaign, and they did infographics. And they broke it down with general stats on how hunting is conservation. And then they went through and detailed for each of the 50 states how each state is personally impacted by hunters. And if people, you know, if you get attacked and you want to know that information, it's on the homepage of my website, so ChristyTitus.com, and it just scrolls. It's on the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation's website. And if somebody starts attacking me, I just go pick out an infographic that's relevant, and I throw a fact back at them. And typically, they end up blocking me, and I don't hear from them anymore. They retreat with their tail between their legs. So the best thing I can tell people, you know, when you have those types of situations happen, you know, don't get mad, don't name call. Fight with facts, because facts can't be refuted. And we have the greatest weapon in conservation in the world, which is facts. We founded the North American Wildlife Conservation Model, and it is the only existing successful model in the world, and we pay for conservation. I mean, 75% of statewide conservation comes from us. Pittman-Robertson Tax Act, you know, that comes from us. So it's really hard once you really get to the nitty-gritty. You know, people can't touch what we do.
It's... And I feel like, okay, there's always, you know, always those people that are, they're just unreasonable. You're never going to change their mind. You know, you got to use a little discernment with that. You know, still, throw the facts at them.
Yeah.
It's important. But when you share those facts with people, yeah, you'll get those, like I said, unreasonable people that'll just block you. They're not going to change their minds, but...
They're blocking me after they attack me.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, crud, we can't win this.
Exactly.
We're out.
Yeah. But there's so many of those people that, yeah, they'll get a little aggressive at first.
Yeah.
And they'll look at you and they'll start with the sad face emoji or the crying. It's always the crying emoji,
yeah.
The bawling emoji. And then, you know, whatever, they'll, how can you kill these beautiful animals?
Yeah.
And then they'll have the bear cub emoji and a bunch of hearts. It's always the same formula like
yeah.
that.
I don't know. I don't see it because
yeah,
I just don't get it.
From
yeah.
just the pages I see it, it's like the few times I've gotten it, it's always that like same formula with mm-hmm. the crying face emoji first. But, you know, a lot of them, you go back to them, and all of a sudden, you know, you especially when you're talking in person, you know,
yeah.
you see their face change, you see their attitude change, and they just because it's a lack of information, it's a lack of understanding,
yeah.
they've been force-fed, whether it's through movies or, you know, television or just whatever the media is, they've been force-fed these facts and told to believe that we're all bloodthirsty killers and just beers and deers and, you know, all you have to do is pick up a rifle and you can go out and shoot anything you want, and that's what hunting is. Even when you just tell them, you're like, yeah, no, I can't just go out and hunt. This is all run by, like, degreed biologists.
Well, I could argue how well some of the biologists do in managing our wildlife too.
Yeah, that's also.
But you know, there's money behind that, and there's other issues behind that. But I think that the thing that, you know, we need to always go back to is the North American Wildlife Conservation
yeah.
Model, and you know, managing ungulates also means managing land, and also means managing predator populations. And these things require us to remove an emotional aspect and look at it with facts and not be swayed by people's feelings and, you know, give them a cry room, let them go sit in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I think us as hunters need to do a better job of educating and outreach and representing our sport with class and with integrity.
Mm-hmm. And I've talked about it a few times. You know, there's definitely a big gap between those people. Like, it's just frustrating to see. And I feel like there's been a bigger push. Like, just in the past 2 years that I've been watching from where I started, and there's been a lot of progress, a lot of, whether it's publications or people just looking at different ways of how they're posting and taking a more discerning eye to what they're posting or, you know, the videos people are putting out, you know, focusing more on a storytelling aspect. And, you know, like I said it 9 times today, this weekend, we all love a good clip show of elk kill shots. But, you know, people, that's not what everyone wants to see anymore. We want to hear those stories, and I think there's such a great movement towards that now, even just in the past couple of years. You know, there's still a ton of way to go, as we see in the headlines all the time. People doing dumb crap and that getting associated with all hunters. It's, I mean, I don't know. It's frustrating but encouraging at the same time.
Social media has made the world very small.
Yeah.
And it's us as individuals, we have a responsibility to make sure that we represent our community to our best.
And, you know, I'll admit, I try and – it's interesting. One of the cool things about the podcast is just as I was getting into hunting because of this, I got to hear more of that and hear a lot of the conversations about, you know, are grip and grins okay? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not going to say –
absolutely.
I'm not going to say no. Hell no.
Yeah, absolutely, I mean, they're okay. You should be proud. You should be excited, and sometimes you can cry.
And it's one of those things. But it's, you know, okay, how do you go about doing that? You know, you tell the story as part of it and provide more context. And you know what? Take some time with that. Don't be the person that's showing the really gnarly, you know, maybe take it from an angle where it looks a little bit cleaner or whatever that is. Just,
yeah.
And I went into that and
respecting class.
And before I ever took my first animal, I had already made the decision of how I wanted to present that. And I actually had a lot of friends, you know, because I've got a lot of friends from the decades I didn't hunt, and a lot of them are very anti-hunting, or they're just very uncomfortable with the concept of hunting. And they reached out, and they're like, you know, I still would never go hunting, but I really appreciate how you presented that. Mm-hmm. To where, you know, my friend Katie, she wrote me, and she's like, you know what, you put up a little piece at first, you know, like I took the photo, I blurred it out, and you know, you could tell what it was. You could tell it was a grip and grin. But she's like, you know, you blurted it out. You gave me the chance to look at it because I wanted to. And I showed that. And then she's like, you went through and you showed the work you put in for that. You showed the grip and grin. And then I believe she called it the necessary gore. Because I showed skinning the animal at the end because it.
And it's reality.
I thought that was an interesting term.
It's reality to use. Anytime an animal is harvested for the consumption by man.
Yeah. And it was.
It's a reality that a lot of people don't want to. They don't want to face it.
Well, I think you were the one that said it, and I've used this term so many times. It's like I'm almost 90% sure you said this on the first podcast. Is we try so hard to forget, you know, as a people, we try so hard to forget that what we're buying in the grocery store was ever a living creature. Mm-hmm. You know, you got, like you said, you got the diaper in the bottom of the
diaper in the bottom to absorb all the blood.
And so you can forget this is just some
package of obscure meat,
obscure, nondescript, whatever.
People
it was never,
believe any
it was sort
never of attached to a living soul. Most kids don't know bacon comes from a pig.
Yeah.
They're just totally removed from reality. And that's, you know, that's just the change in our culture. We have an urbanized culture and, you know, that farm to table really hasn't existed in a number of generations.
Yeah.
And it's really great to see kids have those opportunities to learn and interact and not only being a hunting community, but in a horticulture community where they can grow their own food and they can understand from a wildlife or domestic life standpoint what goes into what's served in front of us. And I think there's more respect and more reverence that's given by everybody when they actually sit down and have reverence and realize the price that has been paid for our sustenance, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's a truly a tremendous price that all living things give us, you know, plant life to wildlife. And I'm not saying plants have feelings, so please do not tell people that I said that. That's not what I'm saying. But there's always a give and take with everything, you know.
It's easy thing for people to forget. And, you know, I've been there. And it's funny. I watch the difference in how I consume the meat from my deer or from my javelina compared to, like, you know, ground beef that I bought from the store.
Oh, I won't even buy that.
I mean, it's like, I look back, I'm like, how many packages of ground beef have I just forgot about in the fridge? And
I'm not an anti-beef person. Like, the beef industry, don't get mad at me. It makes me sick to my stomach.
Yeah.
Just the fats and the fat concentration and commercialized beef, the added fat to it is just, it just doesn't do well with me. I'm so used to eating wild game that for me, I can't go to a restaurant anymore and order a hamburger.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and how long, you know, how often do you have, like, some ground venison or whatever in the fridge? How often do you let that brown and go bad? Like, how often has that happened?
Yeah, it doesn't, because I take it out as I need it.
Yeah. But how many times I look back at my history, I mean, how many times have I gone grocery shopping, bought some ground beef? I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll make some burgers
and
later. And then it's just, I pull it open. I'm like, oh, this has been here for 3 weeks and it's brown and I'm not eating that anymore.
Yeah.
And toss it out. And it's, there's so much waste, I feel like, because of that disconnect, because you don't realize what was sacrificed for it. Mm-hmm. There's no realization there. So I've said a million times before, our problems with obesity, our problems with waste, our problems with a lot of this stuff would be solved if more people, even if it was farmed meat, if somebody had to go out though and be part of the process, you know, going out and killing that cow and help.
I mean, that's a great idea. It's not realistic for our culture in any way, shape or form, but it would be nice for people to at least understand.
Mm-hmm. Shoot. Take kids to a ranch when they're young. I mean, well, we may end up with a few more vegans, but, you know, the right ranch presented in the right way.
And this is a great point, you know, having kids' involvement, because some kids don't have good parents.
Mm-hmm.
And some kids don't have the opportunity to have good food and to have clothes and to really have parents that care. And so mentoring kids is really important. And there are a lot of kids that go without, and it's very sad in our country. If you're in a position always to give back or do something for someone and offer those types of opportunities, our culture needs people that are leaders and not people that are waiting for somebody else to show them how to do it, but are willing to be the leader that makes it happen.
Yeah.
Because there is a lot of kids that they will never have the experience because they don't have, they're inner city. They don't have parents. Their mom's a junkie. Their dad's gone or in prison. And I did a youth program where we took kids that their dads were incarcerated, and we took them on deer hunts for doe deer, and each kid got to shoot a deer, and then at the end of the hunt, they gutted the deer, and they took the deer meat home to their single moms. And I'm going to tell you right now, those little kids were so proud that they were able to provide for their mom when their dad had made whatever decisions he'd made. He was in prison. And I haven't had it in the opposite end of the spectrum, but I'm sure that's also possible too, where mom's not around and dad's doing it. So it takes people that are willing to step up and find these types of kids that don't have as many opportunities and be the people that help lead them into a different direction.
And I mean, I don't know of many people that wouldn't, you know, if somebody approached them, you know, young or old, and like I said, wanted to get into this and was passionate about it and was willing to learn, that would turn down helping them out.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is that next step. These kids aren't, they probably don't even know to come ask. Like,
no.
they're not coming to you. You didn't have a bunch of them coming up and being like, hey, we got this school group. You want to take us hunting?
No.
It
takes somebody that has a mind's eye.
Yeah.
And that's, I had a gentleman ask me this week at my booth, well, how do you get set up to do these trips or, you know, with these kids? And it's like, well, number one, typically I'll organize them. I'll find a kid that I see I could help fulfill a need in their life. And I have a great group of peers surrounding me in the industry that I start making phone calls. Mm-hmm. And you have to be that person that sees the need and makes something happen. You have to be the change we all want to experience. And I always say this for people that get mad at the NRA. Oh, the NRA is doing this or that or whatever. I'm on the board of directors. I'm one of 76. If you want to really have some change, be the person that leads the change. Be the voice. Your vote counts. Your influence counts. Be the change you want to see. And if you can't be the change you want to see, you're as hypocritical as everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, everybody, you know, everybody loves to complain, but I don't see a lot of people getting off their butts. And I mean, and it's always the people that complain the loudest. It's always about the simplest stuff that they we're not talking about changing the world here.
We are actually.
Eventually. Yeah, it does.
Yeah, and we are
it
really about does. But the world.
I mean, you're changing the world for one person or a few people. And it's huge.
Think about this. Like, you influence one life, and that person, how many lives do they touch and how many lives? It is like a fire that starts with a spark. And pretty soon you've consumed millions of acres. I mean, you guys in California just went through some devastating fires.
Oh, yeah.
Started with a spark. One person's spark, one person's vision can absolutely transform a landscape. And it is changing the world. It is reaching one kid. It is reaching one person. And I mean, I personally try. I'm not a saint. I'm not perfect. But if we all did that, if we were all that spark, and we all carried that somewhat level of responsibility on ourselves every year, the world would be better. Our industry, our community would be stronger.
Yeah, I guess what I was trying to get is you're not having to start that wildfire from scratch. How hard is it to make a spark?
Yeah.
It does not take a lot of effort on your part to do that. It is not like, you know, and people don't want to take that time because they think this little spark's not going to have that effect, and they talk themselves out of it, or they think for me to have any effect, I'm going to have to be able to do these grand things. No, it's the small stuff that makes such a huge difference.
Yeah.
And
there's a lot of kids that do basketball and all these sorts of sports. And I had this guy that used to shoe my horses, and he is a kid and they like shooting bows, and there was no archery league. So he started one.
Mm-hmm.
So once a week he takes kids that want to shoot bows, and he has little grant programs that he applies for. And, you know, Elk Foundation has grants, NRA has grants. There's money to be found out there in programs and help archery companies. You know, they give their own independent grants, and he started an archery club, and now he's got a club. I mean, it just has to be one thing, one person that says, I have a need, or I see a need, or I have something I can fulfill, and I'm going to make it happen.
So remind folks where they can follow along on the adventures and find you online and all the different internet places.
Yeah. Well, first I want to say thank you all for listening to the podcast, and hopefully listening to you and I today has sparked some enthusiasm in an individual if they're not already doing something to do more. So giving back obviously can come in so many different ways, whether it be financial resources or time, effort, energy. So I encourage that. One thing I will close that with is our committees for nonprofits need young supporters and need young volunteers now more than ever. The events that we see a lot of times in nonprofits are perhaps not as exciting as they could be to a younger person that might be wanting to get involved. And so be that young person that brings in the new blood into these committees, into these groups, and starts volunteering. We need that more than anything. And if you guys want to follow me along with some of my journeys, you can watch Pursue the Wild on Amazon TV. You can watch it on Facebook, Instagram. I'm on YouTube. I'm on Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation's Elk Network. So it's digitally kind of across the board. And then my social media is just at Christy Titus. So it's KristyTitus.
So pretty much search just about anywhere for Pursue the Wild or Christy Titus, and you will come across all the stuff. And, of course, I will link to all this on the show notes page. But thank you so much for taking the time to sit down. It was a lot of fun again.
Yeah. No, thank you very much.
All right, y'all. That'll do it for episode 115 of Living Country in the City. Big thank you to Christy for taking the time out to join me on the podcast again. It was great catching up. Make sure y'all check out the show notes page at livingcountryinthecity.com/115 for notes on everything we talked about in today's episode. Also, y'all make sure you head on over to Sawyer.com. Check out all the amazing products to keep you and your family safe in the outdoors this hunting season. But in the meantime, keep it country, y'all.
Thank y'all for listening to Living Country in the City. Get show notes and check out the blog, product reviews, events, and more at livingcountryinthecity.com.
Oh, that's awesome!
Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience, brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts, every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
Every once in a while, it's fun to go like just full-blown redneck on these fish. This is like high-tech cane pole fishing right here.
From the white sandy beaches to the crystal blue waters, enjoy the best fishing Panama City Beach has to offer during Chasing the Sun. Sundays at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.